You know, the online world is great for so many things. It's great for making you laugh, it's great for entertainment, and every now and again you come across ideas or people that literally blow your mind. But I still think some of our best thinking happens offline. So join me, Nessa, on Offline Thoughts as I chat about some of the things I think about when I'm not online. I'm really glad you're listening, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So in today's episode, I'd like to talk about something that probably most people have experienced, including myself, and that's the experience of feeling out of control with weight gain. Specifically, knowing that you should be living a certain lifestyle, knowing that there's certain foods you should be avoiding and certain foods that you should be gravitating to as the core food that you eat, as well as just generally having like healthy practices, like getting more exercise, going to bed early, and also, you know, like not partaking in drinking as much. Now, the last three things, like getting more sleep, you know, not drinking as much, getting exercise, they're all very good additions to a healthy lifestyle. But at the end of the day, the reason why we're overweight is, you know, primarily because of the food that we eat, specifically eating food that is really processed, that has a lot of sugar, that has a lot of salt, that has a lot of oil, and also food where because you're eating it and it's not satisfying because it doesn't really have any nutrition, you end up just overindulging over and over again. And the reason I say there's a feeling of out of control that's associated with eating or with controlling what we eat or controlling specifically our waistlines is that it feels as though we're acting against our own interest and acting against what we know to be a better practice or a better choices. So I find myself, at least for the past 5 years, making New Year's resolutions where I say to myself, okay, Ness, this is the year where I'm going to make sure I eat healthy food, especially because I eat plant-based. So I say to myself, I'm going to make sure I eat actual vegetables, not eating like pastas and rices and pizzas and burgers, but like actual vegetables, like eating beans and lentils and things with peppers and tomatoes and onions and having it on the side of sweet potatoes or cassava or plantain or rices, like actual food that your mother or family would have made for you growing up, which is why you are healthier and you are a smaller size. So despite these pledges at New Year's Eve or New Year's Day and at other various periods throughout the year, I find myself not being able to stick to those things. And I have really tried to analyze and think about why that is. And some of it is a lack of preparation. So for example, little things like just not packing lunch. So I know, for example, I work around an area where it's not quite a food desert, but there just aren't many healthy options around unless you want to walk like a 20 minutes away, and then it's a 20 minute walk back. So that's 40 minutes out of your lunch hour. So outside of that, I know that if I don't pack myself a lunch, I'm going to eat junky food that day. I know that if I don't have a healthy breakfast at home, I'm probably going to go to a Pret or go to Starbucks, and I'm going to pick up something that might look semi-nutritious, but 9 times out of 10 probably isn't that nutritious. So some of the poor food choices are just down to a lack of preparation and a lack of thinking ahead. Some of them are also just having like lazy practices. Like I get home from work and I am not bothered cooking. You know, I think, oh, I'm not in the mood to cook today. I'll cook tomorrow, tonight. Let me just order myself like a little takeaway that's like semi-healthy. But then you go onto Uber Eats or you go into Deliveroo and there isn't really anything healthy. Like they make their money by producing fast food for the masses. So the chances that you find like a stew or find yourself like just something normal and healthy is very unlikely. So inevitably what happens is you end up, you know, buying a burger or buying yourself like a stir fry or buying yourself pizza, but whatever variation of like food, like substances you buy for yourself on that takeaway app, it's going to be really full of oil, full of salt. And honestly, usually there's like not a vegetable in sight. The net effect of that food is not only are you not going to be satiated for a very long time, because again, this food is so processed and refined that it goes through you very, very quickly. You're going to find yourself either hungry like a couple of hours later, or you're going to wake up feeling hungry, which is what I feel when I've had that junky food. I wake up and I feel ravenous in a way that I don't feel when I've had like a regular home-cooked meal at night. So some of the poor choices really are down to just poor preparation, whether it's poor preparation for the day or poor preparation at the end of the day. And that's where I take full blame for my food choices. But I very much get the sense that the problem is much bigger than lack of food preparation or lack of proper preparation for my day as far as my nutrition is concerned. And the reason I say that is because in other areas of my life, you know, even if I'm not perfect and I every now and again make mistakes, I for the most part feel like I'm not out of control. And what I mean by that is it feels as though I'm making choices in the things that I'm doing. So let's say a lot like going to bed early or exercising or just having better sort of like discipline, like making sure I read a little bit every day or making sure I talk to my family every day, like things that I set out as personal goals for myself, even if I don't achieve them 100% of the time, it doesn't feel as though it's almost an insurmountable battle. And I would say when it comes to food, less so when I was younger, but increasingly and certainly in the last 5 years, it feels as though I'm battling something that is greater than just my lack of discipline or lack of preparation. And when I think about it through that lens and I try to be compassionate with myself and I try to be kind with myself, I think to myself, you know, what are the things that are conspiring to make it more difficult for me to make positive choices and just in everyday living and everyday sort of food choices. And when I look at things through that lens, so many things come to mind. Some of those things I've had to stop and really think about, like, because sometimes things are happening so fast you actually don't process them. And when I think about even just my journey into work, I think about how many times I will have taken in the image of junk food, whether conscious or unconscious. So let's say I walk to the bus stop, and if you live in London, you will know that like bus stops have like adverts for like Just Eat or Deliveroo or like just like fast food apps where you can order food to your door. And then also like buses always have adverts on them. So sometimes it's adverts for cinema or films. Sometimes it's adverts for like theater shows. But like a lot of the time, it'll definitely have adverts for food. And these adverts aren't like adverts for like peas or carrots or like beans. No, these adverts are for burgers and pizzas and like dirty looking like stir fries, in the sense that there's like lots of oil in them. Like things that basically give you like a high because it's like rich food in every sense of the word. So that means that every bus that's driving, and you could see easily 10 buses in a day, in your commute to work, when you think about the buses that you see drive by and pass you by, and when you think about when you're on the bus, the other buses that you see, when you think about on your way home, the buses you see as well, in the course of an hour commuting each way to and from work, you're taking in this constant imaging from just passive advertising. Then, you know, most people have the experience of getting a bus and a tube to get to work. Then you're sitting on the tube, and obviously companies pay to have their products advertised on the tube. So some of the time it's not food related things. It could be things for like multivitamins, or it can be things for a new gym that's opened up. But a lot of the time it's for food related items. A lot of the time it's for like Five Guys is advertising, or Honest Burger is advertising, or Pizza Hut is a lot of the time it's like mega, mega fast food companies essentially that can afford to advertise on the tube every day of the week. Then when you get out of the tube, like the actual carriage, you step out onto the platform, and again, they pay for advertising spaces on the back wall of the tube or the underground station, where when you're standing on the platform and looking outward, waiting for the train, for the tube to come, you are basically inundated with like 6 foot by 10 feet posters of all kinds of things. But a lot of the time, again, it is to do with food. Then you walk up the stairs to exit the tube, and on either side of the wall, you're going to have adverts again. And at least 1 in 3 of those adverts are going to be food-related adverts. Then you walk out of the tube, and again, there's buses passing you by. But on top of that, and there's been a real growth in this kinds of adverts. These are the kinds of adverts that are basically like screens. It's like screens where it's video adverts as opposed to still photography. So it'll be like a 10-second clip on rotation of something. And sometimes, again, it's clothes. Sometimes it's like for a cinema or a show. But I guarantee you, like 1 in every 3 or 1 in every 4, 1 in every 5 of those adverts is going to be an advert for a nearby junk food restaurant. So now you're walking to your office or your place of work, and depending on the kind of place that you work, like whether you work in like super, super central London or you work like more on the outskirts, like if you work in like more urban areas, like I guarantee you, you're going to pass like chicken shops, you're going to pass pizza shops, you're going to pass fish and chips shops, you're going to pass like, you know, the places where you can basically buy like a pizza, like a full pizza for really dirt cheap for like £10 or something. Or the chicken shops are actually, you know, they're really competitive pricing. So you can buy like four wings and chicken and like a can of fizzy drink for like £7. You're going to pass by all these restaurants on your way to work and also on your lunch break and then also on your commute home. And then if you are listening to something in Spotify, for example, or wherever you get your podcast, you're also probably going to be inundated with food-like stuff, whether it's like stuff like Huel, you know, the guy who does Diary of a CEO, who advertises that drink that you can drink basically in lieu of breakfast or lunch, which, by the way, is complete junk food. So you're going to be listening to something completely unrelated. And again, without your consent, without your ability to opt out, you're going to be advertised to, you're going to have food be advertised to you. And then let's say you're watching like YouTube on your lunch break while you wait for your food order to be delivered to you. Again, you're definitely going to see food adverts, especially if you've like looked up something on your phone recently, like nearest restaurant nearby or nearest Nando's nearby. Then the adverts that you see on YouTube are going to be more likely to be related to food as well. So now let's say you've gone through all of that throughout that day. And now you're at home and you've, let's say even like you've made a healthy dinner that night. You've made that healthy dinner that night, and this is a bad habit, but a lot of us do it. And that's watching TV or watching your laptop or watching something on your phone while you eat your food. So while you're watching whatever show you're watching, especially if it's not like an advert-free thing, like let's say if you don't have a subscription to Netflix or Amazon Prime or Disney Plus, and you're just watching something on YouTube or you're watching something on the BBC or you're watching something on ITV that is just, they just have adverts because it's not a free, because it's a free service, then you are going to be faced with some level of food advertisement. Sometimes it isn't just like fast food restaurants. Sometimes it's just like fast food that you have to prepare at home. So maybe like Fish Eye will come on, or frozen pizza adverts will come on, or Pret, you know how Pret has that frozen food now that you can basically make at home. It'll be some version of junk food that's probably being packaged as being like semi-healthy food. But either way, you're going to be inundated with, again, more advertisement about food. Now, the net effect of that is that by the, like most of us, when we're living our day-to-day lives, and we're rushing to and from work or to and from our other obligations, we're not actually taking in the fact that we're being exposed to this advertising in a conscious way. It's not as though you're keeping track and you're like, oh, this is the 25th advert for food that I've had today. Or in this week, I've been advertised to for food 135 times. Most of the time, these things, the buses are passing by without us consciously being aware that that image has imprinted onto our minds. Same with when we're watching like our shows and we're just like, okay, you know, I just got to bear through these 2 minutes while they advertise to me and then I can go on to watch a show that I opted into. All of these things, despite the fact that we're not taking them in consciously, are still having an effect on the way we think about food, how often we think about food, and the kinds of food we end up wanting. Now, if this food that was being advertised to us was like carrots and like asparagus and peas and fruits like berries, like blueberries and raspberries and strawberries, there wouldn't be any problem because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how much you love strawberries or how much you love bananas or how much you love asparagus or mushrooms, you're never going to eat that much of it. Like by the time you have one portion or one serving or one meal of those healthy foods, like normal, unprocessed, unfat-laden foods, you're going to be satisfied for a few hours at least. You're not going to want to have like another like packet of strawberries or bananas. And the reason for that is because that food is satiating. That food ticks off lots of things. It's flavorful, like real, actual, complex flavors, as opposed to just like sweet and salty and oily. And then also it has that nutrition that our bodies crave. It has the minerals and nutrients that our bodies need to feel satiated and also to fuel our bodies to think well and to be able to be as active as we can be. And note as well that that's the direct opposite effect of junk food. Junk food is uncomplex or incomplex, if that's a word, in its taste profile. Really, for the most part, if you were to close your eyes and think about what the key notes of flavor that stands out when you eat a burger or eat a pizza or eat chips or eat fish and chips, a lot of the time it's some variation of salty and oily and sometimes sweet as well, because they tend to put a little bit of sweetness in like all these like sauces as well. So it's really uncomplex in flavor. And then on top of that, most of the food literally goes through you in the sense that you'll eat a pizza and like 2.5 hours later, you're starving. And if you aren't starving 2.5 hours later, certainly you're going to wake up feeling thirsty and hungry in a way that just doesn't happen when you've had a proper meal and proper nutrition the day before. So sometimes when we're making these pledges to ourselves that we're going to eat healthier and watch our weight so we don't gain any more weight, so that our BMIs don't get any higher than they already are, sometimes we're actually overly harsh with ourselves because we forget the fact that there is all this predatory marketing that we are subjected to on a daily basis. And a lot of that is not even conscious, but it certainly does shape our choices and also just how often we think about foods and the kinds of food we end up desiring. And also with these advertisers, we don't fully appreciate how truly predatory that advertising is. Because to be honest, to be subjected to that level of marketing every day, I'm sure one day is going to be a violation against our human rights. Because what it does is it robs us of our agency to be able to make choices that are good for us. Now, we all know that in European countries, in North America and also in South America, and actually, to be honest, it's pretty much a global phenomenon. Like sometimes when we think about obesity, we only focus on those areas, but actually even in the Middle East, there's rising levels of obesity that you wouldn't expect. And a lot of that is being driven by the importation of really refined cereal, wheat-based foods and fat-laden foods imported basically from the US and from Europe. That's also the case when we think about the rising levels of obesity in African countries, especially like countries like South Africa. And a lot of that is being driven by the fact that these international food companies have basically been successful in penetrating the local markets. And over time, what's happened is that they've replaced locally produced food that was just healthier and was less laden with things that are not good for you, like fat and salt and high levels of sugar, as well as the fact that increasingly, at least in European countries, the food industry is becoming more regulated in how they can advertise. So one of the things that they brought in a few years ago in the UK and Ireland, and I'm sure other European countries, is that they basically had to disclose how many calories are in the meal that you order. So before, you would go into McDonald's and you would order your food, for example, and you know, if you're not food aware or food conscious or calorie conscious, you probably thought you were just taking in an average or normal or not extreme level of calories. But, you know, I certainly was shook the first time I saw how many calories are in a large McDonald's portion of fries or chips, or the first time I saw how many calories there were in a burger. And when you get a McDonald's burger and chips and a drink, especially if you get a diet drink, you could easily be having like 1400 calories. Now, if you're a woman, you're supposed to be taking in like 2000 calories every day. So you are only left with like 600 calories to work for breakfast and lunch. And chances are, if you are having McDonald's for lunch or dinner, you probably didn't start the day out that healthy anyway. You probably overate for breakfast and you probably are going to overeat for dinner as well. Some of the constraints that the food industry has been placed under in terms of like the advertising standards basically just haven't yet been introduced in many African countries. So they're basically able to advertise to school children on playgrounds and outside schools where they're advertising just like junk food that is masquerading as healthy food. Things like drinkable yogurts that, you know, sound like they're not that bad, but actually when you look at the ingredients, it's basically just 60% sugar and emulsified fats. And It might have a strawberry in there, but I guarantee you that strawberry has been so refined and processed and isn't any longer anything that would resemble a fruit. So the net effect of that is that you increasingly see like really young children, like 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds. And that's true in South Africa. That's true in the UK. That's true in like many, many countries where you see like really, really young children who are overweight, and they're overweight because the food that they are eating has been sold to their parents as being healthy food or food that's like just okay to eat, when in reality, it's actually akin to poison. And sometimes when we talk about the practices of companies, we can talk about them as though these are haphazard developments that have taken place in the food industry, for example. But they're actually not haphazard at all. In fact, it's an actual conspiracy in that when you think about the way the food industry makes its money, is it makes its money by presenting to us, the public or the consumers, food for us to purchase from them. And obviously, the more food we buy from them, the more money they are able to make. We also know that at the end of the day, none of us are going to want to eat or overeat on healthy food, because the healthy food satiates you and basically means that you eat the amount that is roughly in line with what you should be eating. And so this presents a real dilemma for a food industry that relies on selling as much food as possible. And so the only way that they can increase their profits is to make sure that we are eating as much food as possible. And that's why they advertise to us so aggressively. That's why you can't leave your house without being inundated with adverts at every turn, especially when you live in a big city like London. You cannot leave your house on any given day and not see at least 20 adverts of food, specifically adverts for junk food. So they need to advertise to us aggressively. And on top of that, they also need to advertise to us from a very young age. That's why they specifically target places where they know young people are going to be. So they're going to be advertising, especially in places where there isn't that regulation in place. They want to advertise near places where kids go, like play centers or playgrounds or outside schools or on the route that kids travel to go to their schools. Also, they'll advertise during the time they know that child programs are on. So before, during, after, like child shows, there'll be those adverts for those cereals that masquerade as being cereals for children, but really when you read the back, it's like 99% sugar, or let's say it's like 70% sugar and basically like puffed up rice or wheat or other highly refined carbs. So they'll try to make sure they get our children as addicted to this food and desiring this food from an early age, as early as possible, because then they're basically guaranteed a lifetime consumer. They'll also pair with organizations or sectors you just wouldn't necessarily even associate junk food with. So one of the odd things when you're somebody who, I mean, I don't really watch football, but I watch other people watch football, like, or soccer, as Americans would say. And one of the weird things, especially because the Euros are going on right now, so you'll be watching a game and you'll see the game is sponsored by McDonald's, or it's sponsored by Coca-Cola. So it's, or Twix, or whatever the junk food company is. But you know well that the players aren't eating that food. So if the players are people who are at the height of their physical health, and the people who watch those sports presumably admire those people who are at the height of their physical health, it kind of doesn't make sense for those adverts for junk food to be taking place at a sport activity, because you associate sport activity with physical fitness and physical fitness with healthy eating practices, because it's more difficult to be physically active if you are carrying excess weight. So again, all this demonstrates is that they will go where the people are, and they will aggressively advertise to people and target people, because what they want ultimately is for their brands to imprint on our psyches, so that when we think about even having a drink, when we think we're thirsty, we reach for a Diet Coke, or we reach for a Coke, or reach for a fizzy drink, or we reach for a Red Bull, whatever the drink that we last saw being advertised. And that's also true when it comes to feeling hungry. You know, you feel, your body tells you you're hungry, and instead of reaching for healthy, normal food, because you've been inundated and imprinted with so many adverts, your natural inclination is to reach for the junk food first. Now, the conspiracy with the food industry doesn't just stop at advertising. They even work with well-known organizations that are actually supposed to be looking out for our health, but instead have conspired against us because the food industry basically, one, engages in like really aggressive lobbying with the government, and so makes loads of deals behind closed doors that we, the public, aren't even aware of. Now, most people, I'm sure, have probably come across food pyramid, and the food pyramid tells us the proportion of foods we should eat. So at the base, it has like cereals and breads and rices and pasta. And then as you go up the triangle, it has like fruits and vegetables as the second sort of section. And then above that, there's dairy items and meat and fish items. And then above that, it basically at the very top, it has sugary, fatty stuff. Now, that food pyramid is just a dishonest pyramid, and it's not based on what is actually healthy for us. It's based on the food industry's lobbying for the placement on the pyramid. So when you look at the bottom section of the food pyramid, it's not because breads and cereals and rices are healthier for us. It's just because the bread and cereals and rice industry were the highest bidders, and therefore they were allocated that section. And when we think about the pyramid, it's actually quite obvious that it's a complete joke. Because one, there's actually no reason why chocolate and all this junk food should even be on the pyramid full stop. So the pyramid is a pyramid that tells us what we should be eating to stay healthy. There's no scenario in which eating like sweets and junk food and fatty food is healthy. So that shouldn't even be in the pyramid full stop. But outside of that, there's no reason why the breads and the cereals should rank above the fruits and vegetables. The fruits and vegetables should be at the bottom because they're the foods that we should be consuming the most of. And even with the fruits and vegetables, there should be a hierarchy. It should be vegetables as the base because the vegetables don't spike your insulin levels. So they don't spike your sugar levels in a way that causes you to experience repeated like highs and then crashes. So it should be vegetables first because they don't destabilize your sugar levels, and they also have lots of important nutrients that your body needs. And then at the very top, it should be fruits, because even though fruits are healthy for you, a lot of fruits actually have a lot of sugar, and they still affect your insulin levels in a similar way that like refined sugar or sweets do. So although they have important minerals or nutrients for us, they should actually be consumed in small amounts. Like the bulk of our food should be coming from vegetables. Now, as far as rices and pastas and cereals go, they're good in take out bread. Like nobody needs bread in their lives. Nobody needs spaghetti or pasta in their lives. That is literally just flour. That is just highly refined wheat that's been, where all the fiber has been taken out, where all the nutrients have been taken out, and then the way it's going to pass through your body is it's going to pass through your body the same way that highly refined sugar passes through your body. And that's also the case for, sadly for me, because I love white rice, but that's also the same for white rice. Your body processes it pretty much in the same way that it processes white sugar. Then when we move on to like the third section that has like dairy and basically like fish and like lighter types of meats, you know, there's actually lots of interesting literature out there around the predatory advertising to African Americans and Black people in general by the food industry, where they were targeted for the consumption of milk. So I don't know if you remember the adverts that were like, you know, Got Milk, where they would use like basically like hip hop artists and rap artists and just people in Black popular culture to incentivize Black people to consume dairy products. And the reason why that was really sinister is because something like 80% of all African people, or people of African descent, are basically lactose intolerant. Like their bodies don't respond very well to milk. And despite that fact, and despite the fact that the food industry knows this, they were still going into Black neighborhoods and specifically targeting African Americans for the consumption of milk. And one of the ways they would convince people to do this is actually pretty evil, because they would make it seem as though in order for children to be healthy, for them to have healthy bones, then basically they would have to consume milk. So a lot of kids' parents were told that if you want your child to have healthy bones, they get the calcium from the milk, and therefore the more milk they have, basically the stronger their bones and their teeth are. But the thing about this is that if we know that most of them are lactose intolerant, then there's no point in recommending for them to consume that dairy because they can get calcium from other fruits and vegetables. And those foods and those fruits and vegetables not only have more minerals and nutrients for them, but they also aren't high in cholesterol. And the thing about milk is basically liquid meat. So when you're having a lot of dairy in your diet, it has very similar effects to people who have a lot of meat in their diet as well. And that's why you see higher rates of cholesterol in people who have more, who consume more dairy, because again, it's basically like they're eating a lot of meat. And there's a really good documentary on Netflix. I think it's still on Netflix. It's called What the Health. And I showed this to my mom a few years ago because her cholesterol was through the roof and she really enjoyed it. And it talks a lot about, you know, a lot of the propaganda around dairy and the food industry and how it targeted African Americans. And within that, it also talks about just what dairy and cheese and milk and things like that basically do to your body. And actually, a final tidbit just on dairy is one of the things people don't know about dairy, especially in European countries and in the US, is that the food industry, so because they milk the cows all day, every day, basically, the cows are very susceptible to getting infections in their udders. So their udders end up getting like very swollen and they end up producing pus. So pus, if you don't know, is like that yellow, greeny gunk that comes out of a wound when a wound is infected. And so the food industry, when that gunk or blood goes into the milk, they basically have a waiver or let's say permission to, when it's below a certain quantity, for the milk to just be bleached. So instead of throwing away the whole milk and basically getting like a batch of milk from a cow that doesn't have infected udders and therefore isn't producing pus in the milk, they are able to just keep some of that pus in there as long as it's below a certain level. And then they just bleach the milk so that you don't see that there's pus in there and that there's blood in there, which is disgusting. And then the final, you know, section I'll talk about is the second last section when they talk about basically eating the meat, like the quantities of meat you should be eating. And, you know, I don't eat meat. And the reason I don't eat meat is because it's actually, the way it's produced is pretty vile. Like, I watched this documentary, which, you know, I think it's a great documentary, but you definitely should not watch a documentary if you don't want to be, how would I say this? It's a pretty sick and saddening documentary. It's worth a watch. It changed my life. It just changed the way that I ate. But at the same time, it is pretty, like, kind of traumatic stuff that you see. So the documentary is by Joaquin Phoenix, and he's the guy who was in Walk the Line and who is the Joker, but he produced this documentary called Earthlings, and I'm pretty sure it's available online for free. Actually, I just checked, and it is definitely online for free. And basically in this documentary, it just shows you from the beginning to the end where meat comes from, how it's produced, how it's stored, where it's sourced. And the things that they do to the meat that ends up on your plate is honestly a horror story. And not only do they just pump them with crazy growth hormones that mean that the chickens can basically grow in like triple the speed of time that a normal chicken will grow in, they also do things like inject the chickens, and especially in places like South Africa and African countries where there's like less regulation, they pump up the chickens with like saline solutions, so basically like salt and water solutions, to make the chickens appear bigger and plumper and juicier than they actually are. And then obviously it increases the weight of the chickens and the appealingness of the chickens. But the effect of that is that when you're preparing your chicken, it already is filled with all this salt. And then you go on top of that when you're preparing the chicken and you're adding more salt when you're seasoning it because you don't realize they've done that to the food, to the meat that you've bought. It also talked about just the level of antibiotics that are given to these animals, because again, you know, for anybody who, you know, has ever taken antibiotics, one of the things the doctor would tell you is that, you know, you only take them when it's absolutely necessary. And part of the reason why they say that is because a lot of us have taken in a lot of antibiotics unknowingly because of the meat that we're eating. So the animals, because they're being kept in these really horrific conditions where it just means that they're just more likely to get infections, not only like the udders that I talked about, but just all kinds of like really just bad infections. They end up pumping these animals with a lot of preemptive antibiotics and then also just antibiotics to treat the infections. And then that means that when you're eating like your beef or your chicken or your pork, whatever it may be, you don't realize that you're actually taking in these antibiotics as well. And the reason why that's so bad is it leads to antibiotic resistance, where your body basically has taken in so many antibiotics that antibiotics no longer work on your body. So you end up contracting some kind of illness and you really actually do need antibiotics. And then you take the antibiotics and for some reason, your body isn't responding to the antibiotics. And I had a friend where that happened, where she would get really extreme forms of tonsillitis. And if anybody's ever had it, it's incredibly painful. And she just was not responsive to the antibiotics because presumably she had built up her tolerance without her knowing so. And then when it came time to treatment for, you know, whenever she contracted tonsillitis, she just wasn't able to get the reprieve from the antibiotics. So when you look at the placement of the meat section on the pyramid, you know, one of the things that's really good to remember is the fact that the meat that's, you know, available at supermarkets a lot of the time is really terrible for you, for all the reasons that I've just described. And on top of that, a lot of the time it's also like you don't actually know how long it's been sitting there. One of the things, one of the images that, you know, stays with me from the Earthlings documentary is I remember seeing a scene where it was on a farm somewhere in the US where I think they said something like they're the biggest producers of pork in the country. And basically they had this trolley type thing that they were loading pigs onto, like pigs that had been slaughtered essentially. And these pigs were like piled high, like high almost in the shape of a pyramid, really. And the pigs had been just left out sitting in the sun, just rotting. And you could tell it was rotting because their skins had turned like this rotting color, like red. And you could see like flies that were circling, you know, the pile of pigs. And the thing about this is that they ended up still being sold, because what they do is by the time they've prepared them and they've made it look like the meat you get in the supermarket, then you don't actually know how long it's been sitting there. You don't know if it's like the conditions it's been stored in. They've packaged it up and made it look pretty, but some of the times it really isn't high quality meat, not only because of the stuff they've pumped it with in terms of like the antibiotics and the growth hormones, but also just in terms of how it was produced, and then also how it was prepared later on. So, you know, really, you know, if we are going to consume these types of things, at the very least, they should be non-mass produced versions of it. Like even, you know, I like to go to a farmer's market. I mean, okay, I like to. I've done it like twice in the last couple of months. And at the very least there, you can get some kind of sense that you can trace where the meat came from. You can kind of tell it's a mom and pop type place. And chances are they probably aren't pumping it full of all this other stuff. And you can see how sort of recently prepared it is, you know. But regardless of how well or how fresh or how sort of untoxic the meat is, you know, I am suspicious in the sense that even on the food pyramid, it advises you. So it says for meat, poultry, and fish, and eggs as well, it says you should have basically 2 to 3 servings. But the thing about that is that usually when people tell you that you should consume things in moderation, it usually implies that thing isn't good for you. So they only really say that for things that are bad for you. So when it comes to alcohol, they say you should consume alcohol in moderation. When it comes to crisps and chocolate, it says, you know, consume with wisdom or don't go overboard, you know, consume it in moderation. And that's the same with like literally anything you can think of that you would classify as being unhealthy, like fizzy drinks or like fat laden food, like pizzas and chips and stuff, all that stuff, you know, the caveat or like the little asterisk at the bottom says consume responsibly or consume as part of a healthy diet, which is code for consume in moderation. But you never hear that same rhetoric or like caveat or asterisk apply to things that are actually good for you, like vegetables. Never in my life have I ever seen a message that says, you know, vegetables are okay to consume, but make sure you only consume those responsibly and in moderation. You never hear that. And the reason why you don't hear that is because food, like vegetables, are just good for you. Like you're not going to do your body harm by having too many aubergines or too many peppers or too much cabbage or too much watermelon. Because again, those things are good for you. So there's no need for that disclaimer of, by the way, this may kill you if you have too many of it or too much of it. So the fact that disclaimer is there for the alcohol that we obviously already know, and then also for the meat in itself, should give us like pause, because it's inherently or implicitly telling us that that is not good for us, because if it was intrinsically good for us, then there would be no need for that disclaimer. So I've just gone through all the various ways in which the food industry has basically conspired to keep us eating very unhealthy foods, despite the fact that we know we should be eating food that is good for us, that is packed with nutrition, that isn't processed and filled with all these things that we know are bad for us. I think when we look at our food habits and our eating habits through this lens, it really helps us be more compassionate with ourselves and more compassionate with the people around us, because it isn't a moral failing or a failure in discipline per se. There's actually all these other forces out there with significantly deep pockets, with the capacity to target us at basically every stages of our lives. Like if you've grown up in the age of advertisements, where you've seen all these advertisements about food in your TV shows and the things that you listen to on your way to school and your way to work, then you've been basically indoctrinated, shall we say, or programmed to essentially crave food that are detrimental to our health, despite the fact that we know that that's the case intellectually. And when that is happening, when we are acting against our own interests, despite the fact that we know better, it implies that there is a loss of control, or put another way, that somebody else or something else is controlling our actions. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we, you know, don't take any accountability for our choices. It still means that we do. It just means that we make ourselves hyper aware that that is what's happening to ourselves. So when we're walking to work or walking to school or just out and about in the world, we're conscious of all this aggressive marketing and advertisement that's been directed towards us. We're conscious of the things that we're listening to. We're conscious of the adverts that are coming on in between our shows. And that means that we're able to have some level of resistance. And in that resistance, we're able to exercise choice over the things that we choose to consume. And that combination of agency and exercising our will over our own choices, combined with just a level of compassion that comes from knowing that, you know, the blame isn't on you, just means that we're going to make overall healthier choices. And at the very least, we're not going to be saddled with this guilt or the sense of failure that can just come from having set these targets to lose weight over and over again and sort of not succeeding to do so. And usually when, you know, we tackle a problem and the solutions that we have for the problem don't seem to work, usually it implies that we don't have a good grasp of what the problem is and we're not applying the proper solutions to it. And that's exactly what's happening with the weight loss issue as well, is that we clearly don't have a good grasp of what the actual issue is. And so hopefully, instead of sort of policing ourselves and berating ourselves for not having enough discipline or not our will not being strong enough, we'll actually target our focus on what the real problem is. And a lot of that is that we're going up against a food industry that is deeply committed through any means possible, really, to induce us to eat more than we actually need to. And so that wraps up this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll catch you on the next one.